TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show. This is podcast number 106. I am Libby, your host, and we have returning guests.
This is Allison from Tarzana.
This is Amy in Encino.
This is Josh in Lake Balboa.
Peter in West Hollywood.
And everybody is visiting me from Skype this week. This shall be interesting. All right. First up in the news, I have that John Barrowman landed a Shonda Rhimes pilot, which, if you guys know, usually her series or her pilots go to series, but so here's like hoping thumbs up. And this pilot is supposed to be a period piece from 1890 something. It's a hotel, a five-star hotel resort or something. And Barrowman is playing like the lead character. But that's all I got. But hopefully...
I'll watch it.
Well, I mean, of course I'm going to watch it. That's not even a question, you know. It's just I'm like strangely giggly excited because I've been waiting for this man's career to take off forever. Like,
yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you basically say Barrowman's in it. It's like, oh, it's got a plot too? Oh, right.
Nice.
But I mean, I want people other than the geek inner circle to know who he is. That's all, you know.
Yeah.
I want him to be accosted by the paparazzi.
But then he's not just ours anymore.
That's true, but I just, you know.
Was he ever, really?
All right, the next piece of news I have is that Felicia Day, we talked about this from the WonderCon podcast, but Felicia Day's Geek and Sundry YouTube channel is launching on April 2nd, and it's basically, she is running her own channel with a full lineup of shows. So every day of the week, she has at least an hour-long show. So that's going to be interesting. Please subscribe now, because the more subscribers she gets, the more money she gets. Yay!
And I'm looking forward to a few of those shows. Like, I actually, the one I'm most excited about is Tabletop.
Yeah, that's exactly what I, like, Tabletop's probably the one I'm going to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same here.
Of course I'm going to watch the vlog, because it's Felicia being silly.
Well, I do like that concept, but I think that would depend week to week what she's doing. I think the Tabletop would be entertaining no matter what they're doing.
No, that's true.
So, anyway, it's my opinion. We shall move on to the shows. First up is the return after 18 months of silence of Mad Men for season 5? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank God.
All right, just go forth and discuss.
You know, it's weird. I didn't realize... I watched a few episodes of Mad Men maybe a month ago, a few weeks ago, to kind of get myself back in the mood. But I have to say, I think they did a really good idea of having a two-hour premiere because, you know, as we all know, Libby is not the biggest... you do not hate Mad Men, but you're not the biggest fan. You respect it more than really like it. Is that correct?
In the fact that I don't watch it, yes.
Well, like, you think it's well made, but you don't... It's just not your thing, or whatever. Right. And I would say the first hour of the premiere of Mad Men is the way Mad Men is. It's kind of slow, you know, and it's
right.
It has that slow build. But I think it was really smart that it was a two-hour premiere because the second hour really packs a wallop and is really like, oh my God, I forgot how much I love this show. That if they had only done that hour, of course I would have liked it. But it wouldn't, like, when I left the two-hour premiere, I was like, man, I was like, I missed
it. Yeah, it's like, it really just sort of brought you back into it after all this time, which is what I loved about it. Like, there are shows that will sometimes do, like, a reset button on a certain season just to sort of, like, start stuff over again or after a long break bring people back into it. And this wasn't really a reset button, but more like a very nice love letter reminder of why you enjoy this show so much.
Yeah, I mean, we get to see so many of the characters and, like, the, you know, and once again, it's another great, we're seeing yet another kind of interesting layer to the crazy world of Don Draper, which is strangely like a happy Don Draper, which is kind of weird and creepy. Like,
yeah, that one actually freaked me out more, and I can't remember who said it, but they're like, oh, I don't know what it would be like to see him happy.
Right, yeah. But no, I thought, yeah, I mean, I really thought, you know, surprisingly too, the woman that he now ended up marrying,
I actually liked their relationship. I do too.
I didn't like
we had nothing last season because like it pretty much ends with them getting married after a quick vacation, and now this, I'm like, oh, this is cool. This is a good dynamic.
Yeah, totally. Because in the last season, I was kind of like, well, she's young and hot. Of course, he's gonna want to marry her. But I was like, is he really gonna get anything out of her? And I was like, oh, but for the new season, this really introduces. This is another way of solidifying how, in a way, out of touch someone like Don Draper is becoming, because you've got that party and she's younger and she's got all her friends and everything. And she, I thought, has actually become a pretty interesting character. Like,
she really has. Like, especially that the fight that they have where she's cleaning the apartment in lingerie. Oh, yeah. Totally. And she's like, you can't watch this. Yeah. You don't get to watch this.
That was great. That was great. But yeah, no, all in all, I mean, I'm very happy the show's back.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it didn't feel like it missed a beat. The writing's still sharp. The acting, the
not
whole thing.
At all.
Yeah.
And also, I could not get that damn Zooby Zooby Zoo song out of my head for like 3 days.
Funny, I know at work, we were all doing Zooby Zooby Zoo. Like, yeah, it was one of my friends' little like sent us an email. It was the shot of Roger Sterling doing the mock dance that he does of everything. And of course, he's great. Sterling might have the best line, or the way he delivered it, where he's talking about like he's talking about an order of importance of things. It's something blankety blankety blank. You know, oh yeah, and she hates me. He's talking about his wife.
Yeah,
it was just.
Oh, and they had a great interaction between Sterling and his wife really quick during the song.
Right.
Why don't you sing like that? And she's like, why don't you look like him?
Yeah.
All right, can we wrap that up or?
No, it was great. Yeah, so thumbs up.
Thumbs definitely up. I'm psyched for this new season.
Me too.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Once Upon a Time, and we're on the timer. This week's episode was about the Mad Hatter, and I'm not sure how, at what point everybody figured out who he was before he announced he's the Mad Hatter. But that was
I figured it out pretty early, I started guessing, is this guy the Mad Hatter? What's going on
here? Well, he had a strange obsession with hats, so...
Yeah.
But then I was like,
how can he be the Mad Hatter? Because Alice in Wonderland doesn't really fit into this whole fairy tale world. But they made it work.
I agree, and I also like the fact that they finally actually put the characters in Storybrooke in real danger. Because, you know, they get kidnapped and locked in rooms, and you're like, holy crap. I was like, is he some crazy serial killer? Like, what's going on? And I like the fact that he just straight up told Emma, of course.
I've been waiting for this for so long, for somebody to just, straight up knows what is really going on and just says it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he apparently stands sort of outside their realm in a lot of ways, so I guess that's why he alone understands what's going on. I mean, he's been presented as this figure who sort of crosses between dimensions, so he has an understanding of what's going on, and that's sort of like his curse, you know,
which
he knows.
Which is also why I hope he isn't actually dead.
I think it's pretty clear. Yeah, he disappeared into the hat.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So he's in another world now.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that he would be sort of able to travel between the two worlds because, I mean, Alice in Wonderland, like you were saying, is not really part of the whole Grimm's fairy tales sort of thing.
Yeah, right. I'd just like them to revisit because the last time we saw him, he was trapped in Wonderland, so how he's managed to get into Storybrooke kind of doesn't make sense at this point, so I'd like them to go back and revisit it. And I liked him as a character, so I'd like to see him back again anyway.
Yeah, so, I think this is probably the most compelling version of the Mad Hatter I've ever seen.
Well, and the other thing is, granted, he does seem kind of crazy, so I understand why Emma...
But they give him a good motivation for being crazy.
Well, no. Yeah. I'm talking about just the Emma's disbelief of, like, he basically was like, oh, the queen, and the evil queen's the mayor, and he just basically does the whole thing. And she's like, oh, have you been reading, what's his name, the kid's book?
Henry.
And I'm kind of like, when would he have gotten the opportunity to read Henry's book? Like, yeah. Really?
Well,
like,
there was that whole time period where it was missing. She still doesn't know what happened in that.
Right.
Time. Yeah.
And he's clearly been a stalker, so,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I guess, but it just seemed ridiculous that her first, because then he was like, who the heck is Henry? Like, I like his response was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It
was also an interesting reveal with Emma, and, like, I know, like, she sort of played it off like she was just trying to take advantage of him, but she starts talking about how she's hoping that this is real and that Mary Margaret actually is her mother in some weird way.
Right.
And it sort of hit me like, wow, this might actually be how she feels down inside, but she's not willing to really bring that out.
And she's
for her, that's a big deal for her to say.
Right. Yeah. And she also, she has to make herself believe that it's not true. But if you look at the way she treats Mary Margaret, you can tell she kind of hopes that maybe it's true. Well,
especially after she gives that speech and then seeing the way she treats Mary Margaret after that, I started to realize she wasn't lying. She wasn't playing the Hatter there. This is actually what she feels.
Right. And that was pretty good. I mean, I don't think she believes yet, but it ended up with her seeing that girl. And she started following up on something. I can't remember. The cliffhanger was...
Well, she looked in the book, you know, and she starts seeing him in it.
Yeah,
right.
And, you know, I mean, she's been in denial since she got there because all of this counters anything in reality. So she's just been... She just keeps, you know, denying it and denying it and denying it. And it's getting to the point
where it's
breaking down and she really just can't keep saying, no, this isn't real.
Well,
As crazy as it is.
And especially now when, like, she looks at the book and sees the pictures that completely mirror the story that he told her.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And this guy just disappeared completely.
Right.
Oh, he fell out of a window.
Oh,
he couldn't possibly have just gotten up and run away.
He
just disappeared.
What we just totally missed is the fact the hat that she made worked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Holy crap. All right. that's a big deal. All right.
And we're caught up.
And we're caught up. Yes, thank you. Thumbs up for Once Upon a Time for the first time in a little while. This is a really good episode.
This was very good. Yeah, and I'm very excited now. Hopefully it'll keep up this momentum.
All right, so next up, let's talk about the penultimate of House of Lies. We haven't talked about that in several weeks probably. But everything is kind of coming to a head, and I really have been very impressed on how they've been working this series so far. Allison, you were really excited. What did you want to talk about?
I really, really loved this episode because I think that this was an episode that showed Marty in all his both his glory and also his greatest vulnerability.
Right.
And this was just fantastic. It's the penultimate episode. It's bringing it up to, you know, its finale next week. And set up all the little key players, you know, put everything in order. And just everything about the episode was great. I thought the way Rainmaker set Marty up.
Thank you. That's what I was like to say.
Was brilliant and horrible. I mean, up to this point, we've been thinking that Marty is the smartest guy in the room. And, you know, he has everything over everybody. And suddenly the Rainmaker just flips everything over on him.
Well, it's not that he got that nickname for nothing. But
yeah, exactly. And just, I mean, just completely double crosses him and just, you know, completely screws him over.
He made him do all the dirty work and then he took all the reward.
Absolutely. In just the absolute worst possible way. And, you know, Marty usually prides himself on not trusting anybody and being able to read everyone. And he did not see this coming.
Right.
At all.
The only thing...
Neither did anyone in the audience.
Only thing is, what is the guy's name? He's from West Wing. And,
oh, right.
And I would have to say, seeing him take a dump in Marty's briefcase was not something I would have guessed I would have ever seen him do. So that was absolutely disgusting. But then Guggenheim was like, oh, I'll totally take the briefcase. He's like, it's only slightly used. And I was like, what?
Which was perfect, because it's like, yeah, that is something he would totally do.
Oh, and then the mix.
The
mixtape.
The disc that he was trying to shove on everybody. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, because we're all depressed. Listen to my mixtape. I was like, what is wrong with you? Oh, but then Marty actually ended up listening to it, which I thought was funny. Mm-hmm. But yeah, next week.
Oh, and then when he goes to the bar.
Oh, and he sleeps with the dude's daughter. Right. And he was like, that was a big screw you. But I mean, he's gonna make him mad, but not. He didn't cost him any money, and it's
no, he didn't.
And it's not. It's, and it, we're not in the 1600s, so he hasn't dishonored his daughter forever or anything like that.
But it was literally a screw you by his daughter.
Right, I got that, but
it was petty.
It was petty. Exactly, and I thought it was beneath him, actually. So, but then everything's coming to a head with now his son is angry with him, and we're coming up with the lawsuit about custody. And because before I would have said his son would have definitely just been like, no, I want to stay with dad, but now he's mad at his dad, and teenagers can be so fickle that way. And then the wife is trying to present, or ex-wife is trying to present herself as a suitable parent. It's just crazy. She is a complete drug addict. Like, I don't understand.
She is so absolutely screwed up too. Even with this, you know, faux boyfriend that she's got right now, I really don't see how in the world she could possibly get custody, because she is just demented.
Oh, I know.
I mean, you know, she is just certifiable. I really don't see her getting custody, even with the kid saying, yeah, I want to live with mom.
Well, anyway, so thumbs up. I can't wait for the finale, which is tomorrow. Well, for us. Though I have switched my showtime to HBO in preparation for the great show.
show.
So let's.
Do we even need to say its name?
No, everyone out there knows the name for which I speak.
Yes, it's Jennifer Love Hewitt, the Hitlets, or the Clones. Absolutely, I am more excited for that show than anything else ever.
Oh,
That's what my world revolves around.
All right, next up, let's talk about Castle for like 5 seconds, because I actually think that the story of Castle this week was not that interesting as far as the murder, because it wasn't really a murder. It was like a bomb goes off at an Occupy protest. Yeah, Occupy protest.
It was an Occupy protest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely that. And then they have a bomb go off, and the thing is you could tell...
It was interesting, like, seeing them try to piece it together, but, like, it's Castle, so, like, I figured it out, like, halfway through.
You know, it's
going to be, like, the person you see in the first 5 minutes of the show.
Right, exactly.
The thing is they show the reporter being all weird and nervous. I was like, oh, what's going to happen? The reporter obviously wants to film something, and she's being all weird and nervous looking. It's her. Like, I knew it was a reporter in the literally the first minute of the show.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, really? We have to go through all this? So that part was, I thought, boring. But
the big reveal of Castle finding out that Beckett knows what he said when she got shot.
Well, the fact that she remembers that he said, I love you, that was the big deal. And because his whole thing before was like, I'll wait for her, I'll wait till she's ready, blah, blah, blah. And then he finds out that she's already known this whole time. So he feels like he's being played for a fool.
Right.
So, and I get why he thinks that. I mean, I really do. But he
feels totally betrayed now.
Right.
Yeah.
So you
feel used.
Like, and then like when he gets to the very end, when he's like treating her coldly, I'm like, wow, I've never really seen that happen before.
Right. And she knows something's wrong, but she can't figure out what it is.
Right.
Like, she has no idea that he heard her say the whole thing. So she's clueless. But I figure the other shoe that's going to drop is that then she's going to find out that he's been investigating her mom's murder on his own.
Right.
And betraying her trust. So I think we're going to have a whole trust catastrophe going on the show.
And then they'll make up and fall in love and be happily ever after.
Well, yes. But yeah, that was all the importance of this episode, was that Castle now is angry at Beckett and is treating her coldly. So if you watch the show next week and you're like, what the heck is going on here? There you go. Now you know.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, let's talk about the season finale of Alcatraz. And first question out of the box, are you guys going to tune in next season if they get a next season?
I probably would. I didn't see the finale, but I've watched most of the season, and I don't love it, but yeah, it's just enough of a kind of geeky charm that I would. But if it goes away, I don't care. So
I'm still behind on it. I still am not very caught up, but I enjoyed what I've seen, and I do plan to watch it all the way through to the end after my life calms down a little bit. But I can't say that it's really been blowing me away. So if it were to get a second season, I'd be like, okay, that's good. And if it doesn't get a second season, I'd be like, oh, okay, whatever.
Allison?
I'm enjoying it. I think it's amusing enough to actually watch for a second season. And Josh and Peter, since you haven't seen the last show, put your hands over your ears right now and don't listen.
It's not that big of a deal.
Okay. Are you not listening now? Go. If they really do kill her, I will definitely watch for the next season. Absolutely, I will tune in.
I will have to say, I thought that the finale, the last shot, was the dumbest thing I've ever seen, in that it ends with her with the beeping thing going, like her heart going flatline. And I'm kind of like, well, that's the stupidest finale I've ever seen, unless you actually kill her. Because if you don't kill her, there's no tension. I don't believe they're actually going to kill her. If they do kill her, I'll be like, this show is awesome!
Exactly.
But they're not going to kill her. I really don't think that they're not. And so because I don't believe that there's any danger, that is the worst finale I've ever seen. Like, that's like, what kind of cliffhanger is that? Mm-hmm. And they did it for all this dramatic effect. Like, we're supposed to be like, oh my God. And I was just like, really? Come on.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. If this was like Spartacus, where they really do kill like major characters, you know,
I'd be like, holy crap.
Awesome, you know.
All right, so this is not that show, and I thought that her big showdown with her grandfather was stupid, and just like, yeah. I actually don't know if I would watch another season. Now that I've actually seen the whole first season of everything that they've done, it's weird because I really like Sam Neill and the strange kind of love affair he has with the woman that he fell in love with 50 years before. Like, that whole love story is actually really angsty, and I kind of really like it.
I wish they'd show more of them, because them I'm interested in.
Right, I think that that's actually pretty good. But I think that whatever, Sarah, I think her name is, and her grandfather, that storyline, like, snooze fest. Like, I think the actor playing her grandfather is boring, and I think she's boring. And so put those two together, and it's just like, really? And I really wish that they would do more with Jorge. What's his character's name?
Jorge Garcia's the doctor. Yeah, now I've forgotten his character's name too.
Something like Doc or something like that.
No, he's Doctor something, but whatever. I wish they would do more with his backstory and his character, and because he's a good actor. And I'm
and also they did bring up a whole thing that, you know, something bad had happened to him as a kid, and I was expecting to see more about that.
Yeah, and we got nothing. And we spent all this time with her and her grandfather and then her uncle and all of that. I don't care. So I feel like they need to shake up the show a little bit, put the focus on the people who actually are good actors. You know what I think they're going to do? I just realized what they're going to do. They're going to say that she got, like, whatever's in his blood, she got it too, so that's going to heal her. I think that's what it is.
God, you're probably right. That's extremely lame, but you're probably right.
Yeah,
that's extremely lame.
But yeah, that's where I feel they're going, and I'm just like, snooze fest. Anyway, though I think the best line of the finale was Jorge's when he was like, we're going into the Bat Cave within the Bat Cave. So I thought that was a good line. Anyway, I'm done talking about that show and being super negative. Sorry. Next up is Justified. And this week's episode was, I mean, last week's I thought was they knocked it out of the park and it was all about quarrels. This week's episode, I really I like the fact that it's basically everyone's hunting Quarles this week. So he's got two hitmen trying to get him. When
one of whom is Michael Ironside.
Yes.
So it's like,
when Duffy, now he's taking the price on his head and he's going after him. And Boyd Crowder goes after him. And like, so everyone, I did like that. Raylan was like, oh, you guys are trying to kill Quarles? Oh, sorry.
And then everybody seems to be gathering in parties to go after this $3 million that Limehouse has.
Right. So, so you've got all these different crews going after big groups. It's all building. Like, this whole thing is building to an awesome...
It's going to be one epic Mexican standoff.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. But
without the Mexicans?
What?
Without
the Mexicans.
With just a lot of hillbillies.
The one big thing is one of the best lines is when Duffy's talking to Crowder and he's like, we'll split the bounty. And he was like, yeah, we'll take him alive because I got him stripped naked, chained to a bed. And when Duffy's like, well, are you sure you don't want to just kill him? He's like, oh no, I got it under control. And he's like, your funeral.
He says something like, don't say I didn't warn you
Right. So like when Duffy at least respects Quarles to the point that he knows that if he would he would have just killed him.
Well, Quarles is dangerous enough when he's not unhinged.
Right.
And now that he's like completely losing his mind, like that is serious. I can't swear. Okay. Like I'm trying to come up with a word that isn't like a horrible swear word. I'm like, nah, I can't do it. Stuff's getting real. That's all I can say. All
right, Amy.
No, was he actually like looking for drugs, or was that was all an act?
No. He had stolen drugs from that drug dealer. Well, that was the whole thing. Is he was pretending that he just wanted to score a hit, but his whole thing was he was going to steal their stash. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does that confuse me a little?
Yeah. Because he went to the cop and said, tell me about a drug dealer that's got a stash, and if they're being protected by Boyd Crowder, that's a bonus. So he went there to steal their stash, but the way he got through the door was pretending that he just needed hit. Like, didn't he notice he was all of a sudden a different person?
Oh,
like,
right, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he was all like, oh, yes, you dangerous drug dealers, I'm just here to score a hit, and I'm really happy. Like, he was putting on an act for them.
And by the way, bang, you're dead.
Yeah, that was awesome. He finally used the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. But Quarles kind of has stolen the show for me a little bit.
Quarles has really stolen the show, but I sort of feel like Limehouse is this very slow boil, and that when he explodes, it's going to be epic.
Well, that's true. We've never seen him lose his temper.
Right.
Yeah.
Like... I sort of feel like Limehouse is the kind of person that when he gets backed into a corner, which he will before the end of the season, he is just going to do something massive and epic to get out of it.
Well, I also think he should have killed his second in command when he had a chance, because that he noticed that guy was going off on his own and doing crazy stuff, and that should have been an indicator he was getting too big for his britches, you know? So
yeah, exactly.
So thumbs up. For Justified,
how many episodes do we have left in this season?
I think two.
Oh, wow, okay.
Next up is Big Bang.
When I heard that they got Stephen Hawking and Leonard Nimoy, I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. And they're like, oh, but Leonard Nimoy is actually just a voice. And I was like,
well, yeah, because that's like, all that's he does now. He doesn't do actual acting, just voice acting now.
Right, but actually, it was pretty good. And I'd like to say, as an added nerd, even though I'm not a big Star Trek person... I think maybe my dad was or something, because in this episode, Penny, she brings them both this Star Trek action figure that's in this transporter thing. And of course,
it's just a transporter toy. Yeah.
Right. And but actually, you know what? I think I had that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When she's twirling it, I'm like, I think I had that as a kid. But of course I don't, you know, it's gone now. So, but actually I thought Nimoy and the way that they kept moving the position of the action figure.
I was so impressed by that action figure. I'm like, wow, I have not seen such an expressive action figure since Toy Story.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny. I thought that was really great. And I gotta say, really great job with the Raj thing with the parents and the whole everyone thinks he's gay thing.
Well, I did not like that.
Well, I was going to say, the only thing is, at the end of the episode, you're still led to the conclusion that he probably still is gay.
Yeah.
He just doesn't know it.
And like,
no, part of it is like that. I think that's just more, it's just his friends thinking that. Because then
I get the feeling that they are going to go down that road, like Raj is going to realize he is gay.
Yeah, because I think
they are or are not.
They are, because the way he feels about his best friend, Wolowitz, is not the way most guys feel about their best friends.
Part of me is like, okay, is this something they've been planning since the beginning?
Yeah, I really feel like it is.
No, I
feel like they're going to have that very special episode of Big Bang when he finally does, because his whole thing, like, he was jealous of Wolowitz and Bernadette, and instead of actually going after Wolowitz, he goes after Bernadette. Which is weird, because he had no interest in Bernadette until she was dating Wolowitz. And
right.
I really feel like everything that they've done with him has really been... Like, the fact that he dresses as Uhura when he cosplays, I was like, come on. His parents were ready for him to come out. Like, they were like,
all right, is this it? But we've never... I guess so, except that we've never seen an episode where, like... I mean, typically then, I would think it would be more like Raj does have girls that are interested in him, and for some reason he's kind of fussy and they're not right for him. He always seems to want a girlfriend.
So yeah, but he was...
You guys might be right. That might be the direction they're going, but I'm not entirely convinced yet, but you might be right.
Well, I mean, it's like, that's true. If his whole thing is he always wants a girlfriend, then... How come he manages to self-sabotage? Like, he always sabotages any girl that comes after him, like, every single time. And
that's true.
The Spock thing is the highlight, and then...
The Spock thing was great, and then, like, the dream sequence where he's on Vulcan, and if you look in the background, you can see the time gate from City on the Edge of Forever.
And then you have the Gorn. That was
great! The Gorn
great.
Comes out of nowhere. And I loved when Sheldon is, like, trying to confess to Leonard and Penny about what happened, and he just keeps stopping himself. He's like, no, that's a lie. No, that's a lie.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, and then he finally, like, tells him the whole thing, and he's like, Spock told me to take the toys away, and I was on Vulcan, and a Gorn attacked me, and they're both like, that I believe.
Yeah, I agree. That was great.
Next up, let's talk about Community, and this
was... Eat fresh.
Oh my god.
Oh, Subway.
This has to be the most brilliant product placement ever. Because
actually they showed this episode at WonderCon, so I had actually already seen this episode.
Oh.
And it was just as amusing the second time around, because like you said, it was one of the most ingenious uses of product placement I've ever seen.
Yeah, because they literally made it part of the episode in a way that they're poking fun at their sponsor at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and making slightly a political statement. Like, I like that they did all that together.
Yeah.
What did they call their corporate humans? They're like...
Corporo-human. Yeah.
Corporo-human.
He's like, my name is Subway, and I've reinvented my identity, and I'm not even 1 year old yet. You know,
like,
I was like,
no, it's not even 1 week. I'm just a week old.
I can't vote because I'm just a week old. And Annie goes, oh.
All that was good, but my fear of the Troy and Abed division. Well, you know, the one thing I feel a little better at is that it's all a manipulation by
John Goodman.
John Goodman versus them self imploding.
Exactly, which is, I like that angle of it a lot more than if it had just been, like, the two of them naturally drifting apart.
Yeah, I agree. Because I was like, you can't break up the friendship! Now, at least, I feel like if they realize that they've been played, then they, that brings them back together.
Right.
And you see the road for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Peter, comment?
I would agree. You know, I strangely haven't loved... The any of the Community episodes since they've come back, and I'm a huge fan of the show. But it was good. I would agree. I think you're right. I'm not sure if I love the Abed Troy division, but I think you're right, because it's the whole Goodman. They want him to join the dark side type of thing. I was like, oh, okay. Then they're obviously going to realize that and balance will be restored. So I think it'll be all right. I agree, though. I do think the Subway thing was more... When they first started, I was like, eh, we've seen the whole making fun of your sponsor thing before. But they really took it to the next level. So I agree.
Right.
I thought it was really well done. But yeah, strangely... Oh, go ahead.
Well, they were talking about that at a WonderCon, and Dan Harmon was talking about how they spent a lot of time negotiating with Subway to be able to have the ability to write this story that was all about just like sort of taking down the corporation versus how much money Subway was going to give them for the product placement. like there were some serious negotiations to make this happen.
That's pretty funny. All right, so let's move on. Thumbs up-ish?
I would give it a thumbs up-ish, mostly because of that, and also just because I love John Goodman in this episode, just the way he keeps saying, I'm going through some stuff.
I know, that was so weird. Like, what?
I give it a thumbs up for the Subway placement, for that part.
All right.
Yeah.
Next up, 30 Rock. You guys got... Wait, next up, let's do 30 Rock.
I like this episode of 30 Rock and the whole theme of the same thing happens every year, nothing ever changes.
I felt like nothing really ever came of her, of the whole almost Groundhog Day kind of plot.
I would disagree, because it finally comes at the end with Jack getting the idea of building this couch factory, and it's like the cycle is actually finally broken in some ways. Like, it was a little bit more abstract and maybe not as concrete or coherent as you tend to get, but I kind of liked the whole that idea.
Yeah, and for me, it kind of reminded me of when South Park did an episode called Simpsons Did It, and basically the point being that, like, everything they've done, the Simpsons has done before, this idea of, like, running out of plot things, and when Kenneth is approaching Liz, and that moment where she's like, we've done that story before, we've done that, that's what that was kind of reminding me of, and I really liked that. I thought it was really funny.
Next up, let's talk about Vampire Diaries. And this week, I have to say, the last couple weeks I haven't really liked, but this week's episode was actually really pretty good. The main stuff that happened, I thought was fantastic. I like that Damon gets kidnapped, and it was pretty gruesome kidnapping, though. And, you know, he has to figure out what's going on, and I like the argument between Stefan and Elena, where she's like, well, we have to stop what we're doing to go rescue Damon, and he's like, no, we gotta stay on mission. And she was like, well, Damon would stop everything to save you, but he wasn't willing to do the same thing. And I thought that was really interesting. And like, except the only thing that made me roll my eyes was the big conversation where Stefan was like, it's all my fault, I still love you, but you love Damon now, and now we can't be together, oh my god. Like, that was just like, oh, come on. But the storyline with the originals and them all having the stakes that they can kill an original, and the big reveal, which was awesome, was the whole, if you kill an original, every vampire from their line dies.
Right.
That's fantastic.
That was great. I did like that. My only thing was that I'm curious to find out how, because we know there's no way Klaus and the rest of the originals aren't going to find out that information. In this particular episode, the Salvators know, and then Elena or Caroline realizes that for sure, I think if they kill Klaus, then Tyler dies, right?
Right.
So that's already one person in mortal peril. It's like, okay, well, that's a major thing, you know? But I'm really curious to see what's going to happen when the originals find out this information, because at this point, they don't know. At this point, basically what it was they come and they're like, oh, I have 8 stakes to give you. And of course they found out there's really 11. And I think, if I'm right, there's 2 missing now, right?
No, there's only 1 missing.
Wait, 1 he tried to stab him with and he grabbed it.
Right.
So that,
and then
8 was in the bag.
Right. So then Stefan has one. He was twirling it. So Stefan has one, and they only need the one from Alaric. So they went to go get that one. And Alaric apparently hid it from himself with his alter ego.
Yeah, which is what I didn't like. I was like, oh, come on, let's just finish that dumb split personality thing.
Yeah, his split personality storyline is the dumbest thing they've ever done on this show. And I don't understand why. I mean, I have to say, what it could be is, as much as we praise Vampire Diaries, how they go from one storyline to the other, and it's amazing how quickly it moves, but I guess at some point, they kind of run out. Like, Right. I feel like this was one of the bottom of the dregs ideas. They're like, oh, this will be brilliant. No, really, it's not.
No, and I wonder, I mean, because I think they're pretty smart. They probably didn't, they probably also realize it's not that great, but they just, you know, they have their production schedule and they just used it. I don't think they think it's genius or anything.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, that's the thing that's dragging them down. But other than that, I thought the episode was really good.
Yeah, no, definitely the best. Like in a while, because I've also been a little like Community. I've been a little lukewarm on Vampire Diaries since its return. But no. I thought, but yeah, some good surprises. And it looks like, did you say the trailer for next week? It looks like there's a lot of characters coming back. Like,
we'll get Tyler. Jeremy and Tyler come back next week. So that's
cool.
Yeah, I'm glad to see the team back together.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so thumbs up Vampire Diaries, except for the whole Alaric thing. All right, next up, let's talk about Awake for 5 seconds. While we're awake, let's talk about Awake.
While we're awake. Okay, well, you know, the show is like, it just keeps meandering around, you know, trying to find itself, I guess. And it's having a hard time doing it. I mean, they did a show this week about a serial killer. And how can you go wrong, you know, trying to keep interest in a serial killer? And they managed to do it. I mean, they managed to be boring anyway.
I disagree with you on that. I really
do. See, I think they got interesting towards the end. But through half the show, I mean, for me, I actually put it on pause halfway through and went out and did a bunch of errands and came back to it because I just was so tired of the thing. But I mean, it did get better as it got along, but still, you know, and the wife just continues to irritate me with being incredibly dull, and her storyline is just not interesting. I don't care if she moves to another state.
Well, the thing, it's not if she moves to another state. The idea is, the question...
They have to move to
move to another state, and he moves out of that house... Will that affect the whole dreaming and awake thing? Like, is he going to be able to maintain both realities? And he's very adamant that he will. And both of his psychiatrists think, no, it'll be great if you move because you won't be able to maintain it. And then one will have to collapse.
Yeah, right.
One will break down. And he's like, no, it's never going to happen. So I thought that was a really interesting concept. And
right.
I agree.
And now, of course, they've got this serial killer because apparently having, you know, an inter-office conspiracy trying to kill him isn't interesting enough. So now they've got a serial killer that's going to follow him and his family around and try to kill him too.
Well,
so
who's
on his way to Portland, by the way.
Yeah, I did see that. But
yeah.
I don't know if the serial killer necessarily wants to kill him. I think the serial killer wants to play games with him, but because he finds it amazing that a guy who he thinks is kind of crazy is the only one who's able to find a crazy guy. He's like, takes a crazy guy to find one. But actually, the only thing that I thought that was irritating about the episode, because I'm used to the wife being, you know, kind of bland, but the cop or the FBI consultant chick, I found that she was almost irrational in her belief that she could not be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, she had an emotional investment in that because she shot another guy.
So she
was going to completely deny anyone else being a possible suspect.
What I didn't understand is why his boss sided with the FBI agent versus her own officers every step of the way. Like, that made no sense to me.
Well, that just plays into the conspiracy that they've had earlier. She has it in for him. But so, yeah, of course, she's going to side with someone who's got it in for him also. So I was actually surprised that she did it in as subtle way as she did.
Well, I don't know if she has it in for him. She's not trying to get him kicked off the police forces. She's just trying to make sure he doesn't know some information, I thought. But anyway, next up, let's talk about person of interest.
I think they should get Finch high in every single episode from now on.
Wow.
That was absolutely awesome.
I have never seen a Michael Emerson act that way ever. Him being high on like ecstasy was fantastic. He was just like, woo. He's like, oh, she's making me something. And I was like, yeah, she's making you a bomb, you idiot.
Yeah, that was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, that was all pretty good. Like, and
I like your face sideways.
No, and then he was like, I know how to counter this. And I was like, obviously you don't. So
he is a good actor. He should do that more often.
Yeah, that was great. And then I actually give credits to Reese in that he had the opportunity to ask him almost anything, and he probably would have told him the truth,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't take it. I like that. I think that says something for their level of trust and how far they've come over the season. Oh. Because at the beginning of the season, he totally would have just interrogated him while he was drugged.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we apparently now know Reese's real first name.
That's true.
Which was interesting.
That is true. Because right now, I think we're supposed to think his name is John Reese or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know his first name is really Nathan.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was all good, and I like that the cop, what's her name, Carter, I like that she gets pulled into this other group of people investigating him, and I like that, like, every board they take her to, she's like, yep, got that wrong, you know, so, like, she's, like, listening to all their, you know, what their theories on what Reese is doing, and she's like, yeah, that's wrong, too, you know, so she ends up not helping, like, I think if they had gotten their information correct, then she might have helped them, but when she realized they really didn't have any idea who he was, then she was like, nah, I got nothing for you.
Do you think she'll return to saving people, you know, working with Reese and Finch, or will she join the FBI?
Well, they showed the preview for next week, so that's kind of cheating, but in the preview for next week, her son gets kidnapped, and Reese is the one she gets to help her find him.
Well, that's good, because I like their dynamic.
I do, too, and I feel bad for the bad cop, good cop guy. Like, they keep pulling him in every direction. He doesn't know which way is up.
He's really being screwed.
All right, and so I feel bad for him, but he was a bad cop in the first place. I have to keep reminding myself, he was not a good guy when they found him, but he really wants to be one. Like, I really feel bad about that. Anyway, so thumbs up, person of interest. Next up, we're going to talk about Fringe. And
Fringe.
This was a weird one in that because we're on the new timeline, what they got to do is actually literally redo an episode from season one, but in this current timeline.
Yeah, I mean, literally redo. For the first, like, 5 minutes, I was going, this is exactly, like, from 2 years ago. Right. What are they doing?
Right.
I mean, this is a complete replay. And then suddenly the guy comes out of the room and he's fine. And I went, oh, but maybe not.
No, but then he turns into a monster like 10 minutes later. But
yeah, but I mean, not until he's with the TSA guys. And I'm thinking, well, TSA guys, that's no problem. I'm okay with that.
And I like the whole memory thing. And they finally, you know, they're trying to figure out, like, if Olivia is missing 40% of her memory, does that make her the agent that they wanted and stuff like all that's pretty good. And Lincoln and Peter actually have the conversation, mm-hmm. which is like, you stole my girlfriend, no you didn't, kind of thing, which was interesting because it was very mature. I mean, mm-hmm. Lincoln is still angry.
Wait, and you can imagine why.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely. He's totally in love with Olivia, and Peter just kind of swept in, and she's just gone. Like, he has no chance now, mm-hmm. and he knows it, and so he's really kind of bitter and upset about it, but there's nothing he can do.
Yeah, well, because she's quite literally not the same person.
Right. But I did really like, oh, the Walter had the box with all the presents. Oh, that broke my heart.
That was so cute. I love it when he starts unwrapping this. He takes out the beer. Don't drink that now.
I know. He's like, I got it for your 21st birthday. I wouldn't drink that. This is great. And then he just starts, I thought he was going to have Peter open all the presents, but he just starts opening them.
Yeah, well, that's so Walter, though. It's like, you know, he's more of a kid than Peter is.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Now, is that something that happened in the original?
Because Peter did grow up with Walter. In the original timeline that he got to give Peter all the presents, he didn't go into the insane asylum until Peter was like 18 or 19 or something. Peter was grown by the time he went into the insane asylum. So he got all his presents.
Oh, okay. I just thought that line sounded familiar. I wouldn't drink that.
No. Well, no. But
it is a familiar line.
Yes, but it was something special that Walter would say.
Well, yeah.
In his lab, especially. But it was really sweet. Oh. And they hugged. And I was like, when was the last time they hugged? Like, that was a really heartfelt hug. And I'm trying, because there was the whole thing where Peter had forgiven his father, and then he was mad at his father, and then he finally forgave him again. But
I don't think I've ever seen them hug.
For this Walter especially, that's a completely new and alien experience.
Oh, their relationship makes me sad and angsty and happy at the same time.
Yeah. No, it's true. When you think about it, no, I don't think they have hugged because, like, in last season, they only just started to, like, really reconcile and become close when Peter went into the machine and disappeared.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The look on Lincoln's face when he realized that Olivia didn't remember all their old conversations.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Poor Lincoln. Sad.
Thumbs up for Fringe. It was a standalone, but it was really good. Emotion-wise, it was a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up, let's talk about Supernatural, which...
And again, another standalone, but damn it if the last minute didn't make me start tearing up a bit.
Yeah, the Garth thing is, I don't understand that apparently a lot of fans like Garth. I think he's amusing in small doses.
He is, but I enjoyed him in this episode just because, like, I knew he was just going to be in this one episode and then he'll disappear again for another three seasons and I'll be like, okay, that's fine.
I was actually surprised that they brought him back, but they actually used him well.
Right.
So I was okay with it. It was like, it was the same feeling that Sam had at the end of the episode. Yeah, he's grown on me.
Yeah.
I think because of the whole thing where he's the first one outside of them that goes, is Bobby still around? My EMF is going off around his... you know what I think it is? I think it's the flask. I think they did burn the bones, but remember, it's always been...
There's a part of Bobby in the flask, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Which, DNA-wise, is, ew, he's drinking out of it. But, but
I don't even see the episode, and that sounds disgusting.
I wouldn't see Bobby wanting to be a ghost. I think that when he got to the chance of, he felt like he needed to protect the boys, that he was just like, you know, I'm going to hang around, but... The case itself was okay with the Japanese something. I like the fact that he went to the sushi bar to get a translator. Like, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. I thought it was, like, interesting and yet at the same time outdated that they were doing, like, a J-horror thing in this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, it sort of felt like this was a script that might have been proposed a few years ago and just got passed on. They're finally like, okay, let's do this one.
Well, and I also do like the fact that they checked on Castiel. I was like, thank you. We haven't forgotten about him.
Yeah.
A mention. That was nice.
There were the other people in the restaurant, whenever they would speak Japanese, like, my teeth would just start grating because their pronunciation was so horrible.
I always cringe when Japanese pronunciation is bad.
But the episode itself, I thought the mystery was okay, but the heartstring part you're talking about is they keep suspecting that it's Bobby because he gives them the sword. He actually is moving stuff. He's helping out.
Yeah, and they like sort of go through like all the weird little coincidences that have been happening since Bobby died that have helped set them off on different cases.
Right.
It's weird because it seems like Bobby can do stuff sometimes, but then sometimes he can't do anything. Like, I'm not sure what's causing, like, maybe if he's, like, emotionally moved, like, they're in danger, then he could do something, and he really tries, but...
I think that the thing with Bobby is that he has actually not got a physical connection to the world, and that's why it is so hard for him to do things and be seen, that it's just purely pure willpower on his part, because he is emotionally connected and invested with Sam and Dean, and it's just his will that is making him appear as a ghost in their world.
That's why they
can't see him. That's why he can't just manifest like a ghost who still had a physical connection.
Well, the other thing as I was wondering is he's admitted that Dean is his favorite. So I'm kind of wondering, is he only really kind of following Dean? So when Sam was trying to use the board, he wasn't there?
I think that's possible, too.
That could definitely be. I actually cheered a bit in that last minute when Bobby actually appeared on screen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he actually said out loud, about time.
Idjits. He said idjits. I'm happy.
Yeah, he's like, well, like, Dean comes and... And like, he has that moment, he's like, oh, there you are. And you think he's talking to Bobby, but he's actually talking to the flask.
Right. Oh,
I knew he was going to go right past him. I thought that's just too good to be true.
Yeah. And then Bobby's like, I'm right here, you idiot. Yeah. And then he just goes, balls.
Thumbs up this week, Supernatural. Next up is the season finale of Spartacus. Vengeance. And this is one of those conversations I'm missing Tom, because this is our show that we normally talk about together, but
So I don't usually watch Sparkies, but, you know, just to be able to chime in, I'll ask exactly, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is the violence like in this show?
10.
It's like, actually more like a 20.
It's about 12, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, it's whatever violence you're used to seeing on television, this is way past that violence.
Is it like Mortal Kombat violence?
Well, okay, the last guy that I think died on screen, Spartacus stuck a sword into his mouth and through the back of his head.
It was kind of a sword swallowing thing, only, you know, not with magic.
Yeah, and it wasn't pleasant at all, so
no,
he was quite dead at the end of it.
Yeah.
I was just tripping off the body count. Like, they kill so many people this week. Like,
huge,
it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable, and the only one that actually made me angry was Animaeus.
Yes, made me angry. I was so pissed off. I was very pissed off at that.
Yeah.
I was going, you're kidding me. Oh, you're kidding me. You're not.
Well, I was like, well, it's only a flesh wound. He could survive. Oh, no.
No, no. And that, you know, he, there's some of the deaths really surprised me, because both Animaeus and Spartacus's girlfriend, I'm forgetting her name right now.
Mira. Or Miri,
yeah, I thought that they would be around, Myra, like, right to the very last season. I thought that they would be standing beside him, you know, right to the very end. And well, I was really surprised that they got rid of them this time around.
Apparently, Steve DeKnight, who is a student of Joss Whedon, he is of the School of Joss, he said that he killed Myra earlier in the episode to show you that anyone can die. And I was like, really? She got the anyone can die death?
Like that, I think we got that message already, really, you know.
Yeah, I was like, that was unnecessary. Yeah. But, I mean, because Spartacus broke up with her last week, she was done. You know, that was it. Like, once she broke up with him, she was expendable. He said that when he brought Lucy Lawless back this season, that he knew exactly how her death would be. Like, he saw her death in the switcheroo was that we believed that Lucretia was sane and she was pretending to be sane, but she's been insane the entire season and we just didn't know it. And I was like, because I thought she was pretending to be insane, but it was actually the reverse. And she was pretending to be sane. And I was like, oh, I guess that.
Well, although, you know, I didn't think what she did was so much an act of insanity as really just an example of a completely different society's value systems. I mean, she absolutely believes in their religious principles.
Oh, afterlife?
Their religious ideas. She really thought she was going to go to the afterworld with this baby as a present, you know, for her husband. And I thought, you know, by Roman standards, she really believes that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an example of not modern thinking, but someone of the time period would believe that.
Well, the thing that I have to give
so them, I didn't think that was necessarily crazy, but just, you know, superstitious thinking of the time.
I think that I give them credit, because that whole time when she was on the precipice, or she was walking up to the precipice, I was like, okay, is she going to throw the baby off? Is she going to, like, I didn't know what she was going to do until she literally did it. Like, I was like, I couldn't decide. I was like, is she going to jump? Wait, is she going to throw the baby off? Wait, what are you? Like, I didn't know, because I didn't know what was going on in her head. Like, I just, like, that was all really good. And I'm trying to think.
I just thought it was brilliant. Yeah. I mean, she literally took the baby to the afterlife to meet Badiatis.
Right. Oh, and I remember the look on her face when Alethea was like, oh, when we go to our new home, I'll have Globber arrange a marriage for you so you'll have a new husband. And the look on her face was like, mm-hmm. No. It's like, that is not happening. I will not have a new husband. And I was like, whoa.
I mean, for as evil as she is and all the awful things she did, that's the one thing she really honestly loved, Badiatis. That was the love of her life. And that's all she wanted to do was to go to him at the end.
Right. And that was all pretty good. And I think the Spartacus side of deaths on his thing. Okay, we already covered Animaeus, Myra, and then Globber died with a big sword down his throat. Is that it? Is that the final body count? Well,
and
Alethea.
Asher.
Oh, Asher! Oh, that was
the
awesome!
The most deserved death, you know, I would say, for a long time running.
Oh my god, I was... Well, you know what? I kept wondering, why Lucretia just didn't kill him. Like, I was like, Lucretia can kill anybody she wants. I was like, what is it? And then finally she manipulates the entire situation to where Asher gets sent to his death. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely. That right. was, and I understood why Asher didn't just kill Navia. Mm-hmm. I understood why he didn't just, because he could have killed her at any time.
But, oh yeah, clearly he wasn't even trying.
Right, and he, because he knew that if he killed her very quickly, that he was dead anyway. Like, if he killed her, then they were going to kill him.
So yeah, he knew he'd been sent to his death. He understood that.
Yeah, but he was trying to figure out a way out. Like, Asher's always thinking. So Asher mm-hmm. was trying to figure out, like, okay, how am I going to get out of this? And so he knew that if he just killed Navia, then they were just going to come in on him and kill him. So he's like, okay, don't kill her. Then maybe I can humiliate her into giving up. And then maybe if I can do that, then this. Mm-hmm. And then she just lost her mind and cut him, chopped his head off in, like, what, 5 strokes? Like,
yeah. God,
it took forever. That was awesome, man.
After castrating him.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, she did that first. Which yes. I actually cheered because
yeah.
I like Asher. Like Asher was making me start to like him until he started repeatedly raping Lucretia, and then I was like, yeah. "All right, you got to die now."
It was over after that.
Yeah, I was like, "You got to die," and him dying at Navia's hand. I don't know. It's like Navia or Lucretia. I kind of wanted Lucretia to kill him, but Navia killing him, that worked for me too. I was like, "All right, fine."
In a way, they both did.
Right.
I mean, they kind of, without knowing it, they worked hand in hand.
Yeah, that's true. So that was actually all pretty good. So, you know, thumbs up. That was a great finale. They actually have left themselves in a really good position to have an exciting next season.
Yeah. And next season is where they really bring in the big guns.
Right. Too. The whole arm. That's when Spartacus actually built. Because this, he basically defeats a legion of Roman soldiers. So now people believe in his cause, and so he starts recruiting like crazy, and he ends up with an army of like thousands.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when Rome finally sends in Marius to go kill him. And Marius is one of Rome's triumvirate. So he's one of the leaders of Rome. And he's the one he's the big guy who goes up against Spartacus.
Spoiler alert. It doesn't end
yeah,
well.
Yeah, well, you don't read history, sorry.
No, but okay. So that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks, guys, for listening. If you want to send feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, and we're on Facebook. You can listen to us on KryptonRadio.com, GetThePointRadio.com, Stitcher.com, and I guess that Weedonopolis site. So we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.